This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
We're speaking to Carly Seeger, and we are going to be speaking everything menopause. So we've got a bit of a definition about menopause. Let's talk to how we actually get to menopause, I think, because if you get to menopause, you're over the hill, right? It's that whole period before that is just...
Actually, interesting you're saying this, Adel, because this morning I was thinking to myself, what do I know about menopause, really? It's actually probably important also to understand, you know, before menopause, what to do and how to help yourself before you even get there.
Yeah, absolutely. Perimenopause is the transitional time leading up to menopause. So for some women, it can last as long as 10 years. For others, it's a couple years less than that. But that's really the roller coaster ride when the hormones are fluctuating hugely. Estrogen and progesterone, well, progesterone is steadily declining, estrogen is jumping around. So that's when the symptoms of what we know to be menopause are quite rife. So the hot flashes and the joint pains and the brain fog and the mood changes and the weight changes, anxiety, sleep disturbances, we tend to see these waxing and waning and progressively getting worse in that perimenopausal stage.
Okay, well, I can say that I identified and I can put it in the past tense because thank God I'm still on the other side of the fence. But Let's talk about, so there is hormonal imbalance, right? And then you're getting all of these symptoms. Which way to go? Like, can we control it naturally? Are there things that we can help? Perhaps, I don't think switch everything off and feel like $1 million, but you know, manage things better, or is there place? And, you know, let's discuss HRT also. So I'm opening it up to you completely.
Perfect, Adel. Thank you. So I think what's important to remember is that women are born with a finite number of eggs. So when those eggs start to run out, that's when these symptoms start to show up. So there's no way we can delay the onset of all of these symptoms, unfortunately. We can't prevent menopause from happening, and nutrition cannot replace these hormones. That's really important to remember. We need to look at HRT, and there are different types of HRT that can be used. The role of nutrition, though, is more to support the changing body. So we know that with the changes in hormones, we're going to have changes in insulin sensitivity. So your carbohydrate tolerance is going to change. We have the sleep changes, which can be also supported with certain nutrition and supplementation strategies. The fat distribution changes, so it tends to shift from more pear type shape to more apple. So the fat tends to shift more into the midsection. And then we also see decreases in muscle mass, that lean muscle mass, which is so important in women, and then bone density changes, as well as cholesterol and heart health changes. So it's really important that we support all of those changes through dietary and nutritional strategies, but nutrition can't replace the role of hormones. That's important to note.
I think, though, like, when do you suggest people actually start looking at their hormones? Like, when should women start testing what their estrogen, progesterone, testosterone levels are?
So there's different opinions around this, Faggy, and I think because the hormones are fluctuating so much in that perimenopausal time, you could test estrogen today and it could be completely different next week. So some doctors are of the opinion that you should just go based on symptoms. I still think testing can be a helpful way and tool to get an idea of what's going on. I think as soon as it's starting to bother you, as soon as it's impacting your quality of life, as soon as, you know, sleep is affected, mood is affected, if you're struggling, then reach out for help, whether it be your gynae or your GP or dietitian to help with the nutrition side of things. It's important to get educated and understand what's going on in your body sooner rather than later.
I think it's interesting also how it has an effect on our emotions and our moods. And you know, sometimes we just say to ourselves, oh my gosh, we're just anxious. Let me go to a psychiatrist. I need medication for that. Where really, you know, there is that fluctuation.
Underlying hormonal change, exactly. And that is often unfortunately done as well, is that women are put onto strong sleeping pills or strong antidepressants or strong anti-anxieties, but that's not really the root cause of what's going on. It's something around the hormones that needs to be dealt with and supported. I think what a lot of women also don't understand is the difference between synthetic and bioidentical HRT, which is important. Of course, dietitians and nutritionists can't prescribe this, but we can explain the difference to patients. So synthetic HRT comprises of forms of estrogen and progesterone that are chemically synthesized. So they are made to replicate or look like our natural hormones, but they're not bioidentical. They're not exactly the same. Whereas bioidentical hormones are the same molecule of estrogen and progesterone that our bodies naturally produce. There's also different modes of delivery with hormones. So some hormones are orally ingested, and then some you can place transdermally on the skin. So whether it's a gel or a patch or a cream. With estrogen, we know the research is pointing towards transdermal being safer from a breast cancer and side effect point of view. So that is often the preferred mode of delivery as opposed to swallowing an estrogen tablet.
Right. It's actually interesting because, I mean, I've always had a discussion about like folic acid versus folate. And it's obviously the same concept that the folic acid is like a synthetic version where your body can't convert it into folate. And actually stops your body from allowing the real folate to be converted into folate. Is that correct?
Similar analogy, Faye, for sure.
So then how does one do the natural one? How does that work?
So there are FDA approved bioidentical HRTs. So certain things like Femigel, Utrogestin, Estradot, there are some of those that are easily available through your gynae or through your GP. Endocrinologists are also prescribing hormones. And then there are the compounded versions as well, which are made up to match what your body might require. Different doctors have different preferences. So it's really important to find a doctor that aligns with your goals and with your needs.
Would you suggest that someone really like is looking into this at an earlier age? Like if someone has too much estrogen in their body, just naturally, they just keep too much estrogen in their body, what would they do?
So you mean estrogen dominance, Faggy?
Yeah.
Yeah, estrogen dominance can be due to poor detoxification of estrogen, so inability to process and excrete excess estrogen, which can be a genetic factor. It can be lifestyle related as well, or it could be due to a relative low progesterone level. So when we talk about estrogen dominance, we're looking at the ratio between estrogen and progesterone. So it might not be that estrogen is too high in isolation. It could just be that the progesterone is lower than ideal, and that can be caused by a variety of different factors. But it's important to have these things tested as opposed to just guessing. I think it really would come down to symptoms and whether you're struggling, and that's the time to start looking into it. I don't think it's a good idea to start HRT prematurely.
Okay, we're talking to Carly Sager. If you've got any questions around perimenopause, menopause, your hormones, if you're feeling really down this morning because you think your hormones are playing up, this is your chance to engage in discussion. 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
Carly, I want to challenge you, and I want to ask the following question. And I'm challenging you because I challenge myself, right? I told you I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, past menopause. I didn't take any hormone replacement therapy, not synthetic, not bioidentical. And I kind of like based it on the fact that 100 years ago, 1,000 years ago, like until very recently, right? Women navigated this without any intervention. And from my side, if what conditions would one have to have, okay, to navigate? Because surely just like your body starts navigating adolescence and puberty and starts preparing yourself for your reproductive years, and then your body is well balanced, you know, when you're having your babies and et cetera, and nursing, nature has it in it that a woman can navigate it properly, but obviously she has to have a foundation. You can't go and say, well, nature has it, and then, you know, you're messing around with it. So let's talk about, you know, maybe women who are before perimenopause, like what can they do to make sure that their foundation is as strong as possible, maybe to navigate naturally without any intervention.
I think it's such a personal decision that, Adel, and it like no healthcare provider can make that decision for you. I think the other side of the coin in the argument would be, well, life expectancy is so much longer and more than it used to be hundreds of years.
People dying by menopause cortex anymore.
So, That's another side, and that medical intervention has progressed so much. And if a woman is struggling, why should she have to struggle for 10, 15 years of her life with some of these really debilitating symptoms when there can be a solution? The positive sides to it as well have shown that there, you know, really is a benefit for bone health and osteoporosis reduction risk with taking the HRT, cardiovascular disease prevention, and, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia support too. So there are some really big benefits with taking HRT if that's something that you are wanting to do, but it comes down to the individual and family history. So in terms of prepping for menopause and getting through it as smoothly as possible, I think what's very important is focusing on building up your lean muscle mass and your bone density. Two key factors. So getting into resistance training and strength training as early as you can, eating, getting into the routine of, you know, consuming enough protein throughout the day and all of your meals, that's going to allow for that amino acid intake to support protein and muscle synthesis. We know that there's lots of research coming out showing that the more lean muscle mass you have, the lower your all cause of mortality is. So muscle really important, and then bone density as well. So in your 20s and teens, focusing on that calcium, vitamin D, vitamin K2 intake, and through your reproductive years, again, strength training is going to put that pressure and that tension on the bones, which also facilitates that bone density. So you don't want to be going into your menopausal years with low muscle mass and low bone density, because it's going to be very difficult to recoup that.
So that is from like a skeletal point of view, and obviously that's mm-hmm. just a big conversation. As you are getting older, you do tend to lose muscle mass, etc. Mm-hmm. You tend to slow down, and so that's when you need to build up and have more protein. But in terms of having regulating the hormones, right, or making, you know, allowing the hormones to navigate your way through menopause, is there anything from like a dietary perspective or anything like that?
So as I mentioned, Adel, because we've all got a finite number of eggs, we can't slow that progression down, unfortunately, with nutrition. We can't really change when those hormones are going to start dropping. And we know in terms of symptoms like hot flashes and sleep disturbances, avoiding things like excessive caffeine and alcohol and spicy foods and fatty foods before bed can all improve the symptoms, but they're not going to replace the declining estrogen and progesterone. Food, unfortunately, can't do that. There's a little bit of research coming in showing where consuming soy, like tofu or edamame beans, may help because it has a phytoestrogen effect. So that might help offset some of the symptoms. But it's also very individual. Some women sail through it. For example, my mum was absolutely fine, no symptoms, whereas other women really battle. So it's a very individualized journey.
So we've got a comment from a guest. She said, I took evening primrose oil and never had any problems with menopause, and I still take it today. What is your opinion on evening primrose oil?
Yeah, that's a nice comment. So evening primrose oil can support progesterone, and progesterone is the anti-anxiety, calming, sleep-supporting hormone. So that's where the evening primrose oil can help, but it doesn't replace it, but it can support the function of it.
And are there any other natural, like nutraceuticals or things that you would suggest to women?
Not to replace the hormones necessarily. There is, for example, there's a Metagenics product which is called Estrovera, and that contains no hormones whatsoever, but it has been clinically shown to help reduce some of the side effects or symptoms of menopause, the hot flashes and the mood changes. So in somebody who doesn't want to take any form of hormones, that can be a nice way to go. There are other herbs as well, chasteberry, and yeah, there's other herbs that can be used, but again, it really needs to be looked at with a healthcare practitioner. And it's not going to replace the hormones. It might just have a slightly similar impact or effect.
I mean, sorry, just before we move on, just one thing that I'm understanding menopause is obviously it's an understood thing that hormones are declining, right? We're not really trying to fight that. The bad symptoms that we get is because what? They're fluctuating because they're like.
Yeah, it's but the drop in estrogen specifically can remember we've got estrogen and progesterone receptors around the body, so it's not only in the reproductive organs. We've got those receptors in the brain, in the joints, in the skeletal system. So it can the sudden fall can contribute to all of those symptoms. But often when you cross the hill like you have, Adel, then you start to feel a little bit. Better.
You're over the hill.
I'm over the hill.
Once those fluctuations have started to settle, some women do feel better, but then we've got to be looking at the longer term, less maybe instantly noticeable symptoms of the menopause, which can be linked to cholesterol levels and bone density. And yeah, cognitive changes can also be linked to that. And those can progress slowly. They're not as intense as the perimenopausal symptoms.
I think the perimenopausal was way worse than being on the other side of the curve.
I think also, I mean, I've read a lot about like the mushrooms, the reishi mushrooms, and, you know, is that all for hormones or is it specifically for adrenals? How does that work?
I mean, mushrooms, there's so many different types of medicinal mushrooms. Lion's mane is for cognition and for focus and really keeping the brain function and inflammation in the brain controlled. Reishi's more calming and for sleep. So there's lots of different ones for different support. And for hormones specifically, I think we'd need to look into like, what do you mean by four hormones? Some products can help with detoxification of excess estrogen, but oftentimes they're going to be supporting some of those symptoms that women battle with. So whether they're struggling to sleep, it might help with that. If they're battling with the brain fog, it might help with that, but it's not going to help with the hormones per se. It helps with the symptoms of the declining hormones.
How do the hormonal changes impact physiology and metabolism?
So as I mentioned, those drops in estrogen and progesterone can impact our insulin sensitivity. So women become less carbohydrate tolerant as we transition into perimenopause. So the amount of carbs you might have been able to consume in your 20s and 30s is going to change. That fat distribution changes as well. So there's a big myth where women think that menopause instantly causes weight gain, and it's not entirely true. It can change where your body decides to store the fat, and it does tend to be more middle and like abdominal fat, unfortunately. So we do have to try and shift the macronutrient distribution slightly. So aiming for more protein, more healthy fats, more vegetables, and trying to just watch the intake of those sugary refined carbohydrates because we can't handle them as well as we may have been able to in 20s and 30s.
We discuss a lot about like the environmental changes, you know, with estrogen and with plastics and with you know, like chemicals,
the estrogen, what they call the estrogen disruptors.
Yeah, the xenoestrogens. So yeah. Products in the environment that mimic our hormones.
I mean, it's in our face products, it's in our shampoos, it's all over.
So that can all contribute to that estrogen dominance, which is quite common in the perimenopausal stages because progesterone and testosterone are often the first to decline and estrogen is zigzagging up and down. There tend to be a lot of the symptoms around estrogen dominance in those transitional periods, which can cause suddenly very heavy, sore, painful, clotty periods, which seems bizarre as you're approaching menopause, but that is actually a common sign. It can also contribute to the weight changes and energy level changes. So yeah, it is a tricky one that, and I think we can't avoid entirely what's in our environment, but we can support our bodies with the detoxification of those potentially harmful estrogen metabolites. So supporting phase two liver detox with cruciferous veggies and Epsom salt baths and rebounding, lymphatic drainage, lots of water, looking at, you know, where you're getting your drinking water from, trying to avoid consumption of plastics and more exposure to plastics can also be really beneficial.
We've got another question coming in. What happens when a girl is on the pill Will her periods still stop? I'm not exactly sure what that means, meaning.
Okay, during menopause, I suppose, Adel, that's,
I guess so.
So some gynaecs like to put their patients on the pill during this perimenopausal transitional phase. And remember, when we're on the combined oral contraceptive pill, which would have synthetic estrogen and progesterone in it, the period that you're getting isn't really a true period. It's a withdrawal bleed from stopping the hormone-containing pills and moving on to the placebo-containing pills. So it's not really a true bleed. To understand where you would be in the menopausal journey, you would have to come off of that, because essentially that's just a different form of HRT in the birth control pill. So it's minimizing the symptoms in that perimenopausal transition. But as I mentioned, I'm not a big fan of swallowing estrogen in those 40s and 50s because of the direct impact it has on the liver. So yeah, that's again a personal decision that should maybe be discussed with the doctor if there's an alternative.
It must be quite tricky actually to know when to stop the pill then, if it's a real period or not.
So to understand if it's a real period, Faye, you would have to rely on your own hormones and to see. So stop the pill for 3 months and see, is there a natural bleed occurring?
What about IUDs or like the things like Moraine and all of that? Let's talk about that.
Also tricky, because it can stop most women on the Moraine. They don't have a bleed at all. So they have to just go based off of the symptoms, like the brain fog and the mood changes and all of those other symptoms I mentioned. But there is a blood test that can be done. It's called FSH, or follicle stimulating hormone. And that is measuring a hormone produced by the brain, which is designed to communicate with the ovaries to get an egg to be released. So the higher that FSH level is, the further you are into that menopausal transition.
I was just thinking now, as we were talking about, like most people are saying they hit menopause in the 40s and 50s. How do you explain when you hear these stories where women are falling pregnant naturally? Like 48, I saw a woman like 52.
Yeah.
She's on child number 11. Now,
wow.
I mean, she's an Instagrammer. I was just thinking,
what were you saying before about having children when you're so old?
What are you smoking, woman? But okay, good for her. And I mean, she's very into natural. She says, I don't take anything, whatever have you. This is, you know, I go with the flow. I go with my thing. So then, what happened? What is different in women like that? Is that because she has had no hormonal interference her whole life, which that's what she advocates, or just that's how she's made up?
That's how she's made up. We were born in utero as women with a finite number of eggs. So she was born with more eggs to begin with. And that's something we can't really predict or determine. When the eggs run out, that's when the symptoms start to show up. So that's why they are the outliers. There's the average sort of age of onset, which is 51-ish for menopause. But, you know, we have some women going into perimenopause in their mid-30s, which is really early. And then, like you said, the other side where they're 50 and still very fertile. So it really is very, very, very individual, but it's an inborn, innate characteristic that. So there's no way we can preserve our eggs. Remember, every single month you are releasing a follicle that, yeah.
And I'm sure IVF also will affect then it will have a spillover effect into perimenopause and menopause. If a woman's going through IVF and they're now stimulating, you know, the production of eggs, kind of like they're using up the reserve more quickly, right?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Good question. I think, yeah, some women would, if they are on those stimulatory drugs, would develop 14 or 15 follicles in a month as opposed to one. So yeah, it would potentially speed it up slightly quicker. Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know if they've done studies on that specifically. I'd have to look.
I think I saw something the other day that a woman got someone else's eggs and she did IVF, like also in her 50s.
Okay, but basically in IVF, the way that I understand it is that the whole thing is simulated, right? That they go and they change everything. I mean, when I gave birth a long time ago, since I'm sitting on the other side of the fence, in the hospital with me, I was a young mother of 21, but in the hospital with me was a granny of, I think she was in her late 50s or 60s, that acted as a surrogate for her daughter. She gave birth to like three granddaughters. So they had to get her system, I'm sure, restarted. Like, I'm just thinking, like, now I'm sitting in menopause, and if that had to happen, I would have to go and have, you know, like, kind of like reverse engineer.
Did they just use her uterus, or did they use the mum's eggs and just use the granny?
They used the mum's eggs. They used the parents' eggs, but she was the surrogate.
Just that her uterus should be able to hold the baby.
But you still need the pregnancy hormones to keep the baby and do whatever have you.
Maybe not naturally do that for the woman.
Yeah, it should actually. It's a really good question. It would depend on how functional the granny's ovaries are, whether they needed to supplement the estrogen and progesterone. They probably would have had to give some of it synthetically also.
She gave birth to three healthy granddaughters. Oh. It was actually quite gobsmacking. It was a really, really interesting situation. Right. We're going to go for a bit of a break. We're speaking to Carly Seeger. If you've got any questions around your hormones, this is the time. 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
You know, Carly, we've been speaking a lot about us women. We are complicated human beings. We never like the same every single day. But I think we need to have a bit of a conversation about our men folk. Not the way they should be treating us when we are having an up and down, but there is a thing called menopause, is it not? I mean, they're all also going through hormonal changes.
It's called andropause, actually.
Andropausic.
The women should be called andropause and the men should be menopause.
So, yeah, andropause is because the male group of hormones, testosterone, etc., is they're known as androgens. So there is a slight decline in testosterone with age. It happens a little bit later than in women, but again, very, very individualized. And it can be replaced. That's something that can be done. Look, I don't work with a lot of men in andropause. It's not my specialty, but it is, yeah, it does happen as well. But the symptoms and the side effects aren't as prolific as menopause, because women have got the estrogen, progesterone and testosterone all dropping. Men's is more around the testosterone. So it can impact muscle mass and brain function and energy levels and strength, etc.
No, I was just going to say the whole discussion around strength training, upping your protein, all of that applies to men as well.
Absolutely, for sure, definitely.
We got another comment when we were just discussing IVF. So somebody said re-IVF and fertility treatment and then menopause. My fertility treatment, there was no effect on menopause. Actually, perimenopause came quite late. And I think that as you've said, and we're saying that, you know, I'm bantering backwards and forwards and maybe trying to play different parts and different, you know, things that people would say correctly, not one size doesn't fit all. There isn't like one rule, because we're all made up very, very differently and, you know, and get affected differently. You know, some people can, I was just telling Faggy during the break, like, yeah, did I have hot flushes? I did. But were they like completely debilitating or I couldn't function? No. Like I just, you know, it would come for 5 minutes and go away and, you know.
Exactly. Also, like a person's lifestyle does have an effect on what's going to happen. Like if you are fit or you are healthy and your nutrition is good, like what we keep on discussing on the show, surely if you are prepared, some of those symptoms shouldn't be as severe.
Yes. For sure, Faggy. And I see that a lot with patients in perimenopause as well. When we get the nutrition really, really optimal, when we correct any sort of nutritional deficiencies, when we get the exercise and the sleep right, naturally the symptoms do start to improve. And it's not because we're replacing the hormones with food. It's because we're just helping the body to cope a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that that's very, very important. Are there any other aspects of this whole hormonal cycle? Like, let's actually take one step back and let's just talk about the young girls going from puberty into adolescence. Okay, you see a tremendous change, particularly in the girls when they're going through that. What should, like if a young girl is listening to it, or a mother of a teenage girl, what should they be focusing on to like help them transition into their reproductive years?
Gosh, good question, Adel. I think what is quite scary and what we've seen is the age of reproductive onset or the age of menses onset in young girls is getting younger and younger and earlier. It's 9 or 10, whereas, you know, in my years, it was 13, 14, 15. So it is getting a lot younger. And the argument there is that a lot is to do with the environmental exposure to these synthetic estrogens and xenoestrogens. So I think if I had a young girl, what I would be mindful of is minimizing the exposure to these xenoestrogens, you know, choosing rather a stainless steel or a glass water bottle, avoiding the exposure to BPAs and plastics, being careful of what soaps and deodorants you're using, the air fresheners in the home, trying to really just look at the parabens and the phthalates and the, you know, chemicals that can interfere with our endocrine system. And really focusing on good nutrition as well, and getting the veggies in and offering a wide variety of food and minimizing the exposure to all of the processed, highly saturated, trans fat filled foods that we do have available today. So going back to basics really is important, and minimizing the exposure to these environmental hormone disruptors.
You're also seeing a lot of young girls, then obviously because of their hormones having bad skin, then the very first thing that happens is they put on the pill at the age of 13 and 14 and 15.
And then they stay on the pill until they want to have a baby, which, is a long time. Again, like going on to HRT, I think going on to the pill is a very personal decision for the mum and the daughter. And I think it needs to be well researched and well looked into before that decision is made.
We actually discussed this on the radio last week. We mentioned about the skin problems and the pill, and the guy that we interviewed really was against the pill. And I said, you know, in that interview, I said most people should be going to a nutritionist if you're dealing with their gut issues.
And what the pill does essentially is it really just binds to excess androgens, which is what can cause the flare-up of acne in young girls. So it basically mops up all of your excess male hormones, and it can settle the skin, but it's not fixing the root cause. As soon as the pill is stopped, those symptoms are going to come back again. So it would depend on, you know, where the acne is coming from, whether it is hormonally driven or gut driven, and what needs to be done to support that. But there are also nutrition-related ways that or strategies that can be used to help bind to excess androgens as well. Things like spearmint or mint tea can help. Zinc can help with binding to excess androgens. So it doesn't have to be the first line of intervention, the pill.
I think, after every single conversation that we have here, Fagi, is that God created our body with so much wisdom. And it's all about us treating the body with respect and giving the body what it needs at its different, you know, spaces and places, as opposed to us. We're kind of just like quick fix people. Oh, I've got terrible acne, put me on the pill. And you don't actually realize the repercussions, around it. So I guess I hear you, and I'm not minimizing or taking away from women who really, really suffer from, you know, the perimenopause or the menopause or the young teenage girl, you know, that's suffering with the skin, et cetera, et cetera. But there's like so much conversation before it, behind it, you know, and
so it's so important to be aware that there's other ways of doing things. And, you know, there's natural ways of looking into helping people with these issues.
It's not either or, it's and, you know, and yeah. Also. You know, so.
Well, all the natural healthy ways are to support anything that you're going through, whether it's an autoimmune disease or a skin problem, or a hormone problem. It's all about just supporting us in any way.
And like you said, there's no one size fits all. And it really has to be individualized, and the decision needs to be made carefully, looking at all other options. I think that's important.
How then would you start though, Carly? If someone came to you, do you do bloods? How does it work, you know, when someone comes and says, I want to look after myself, you know, and I want to prevent whatever's going to be?
But yeah, I do love to start with bloods because we get a good picture of what's going on currently. The blood tests I would order, of course, depend on what the patient is battling with and struggling with. Sometimes I do also offer DNA testing if we need that extra deeper layer of information and explanation as to why. And then we go from there. So we have to go based on data and understanding of what's going on inside the patient's body, as opposed to just guessing. And then from there, I use certain nutraceuticals and supplementation and nutrition related strategies to help.
We've been speaking to Kylie Seeger, and we've been talking all things hormonal. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show at 101.9 High FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
I guess we could sit and complain about our hormones forever and ever, but our time is up. Kylie, thank you so much for your wisdom, for your insight, for your guidance. If somebody would like to get hold of you, how can they?
Sure, Adel, such a pleasure. Thank you, Faggy, for inviting me. They can pop me a WhatsApp at 071-626-7323 or email me at cseager, so that's C-S-E-A-G-E-R, at intellihealth.co.za.
Fantastic. And if you don't get any of that, you can write to info@highfm.com. We'll send it. And just as a final reminder, Faggy and I run a WhatsApp group where we drop a little bit of motivation every single day to change a little small thing in your life, and just to educate you around living a holistic, healthy life, and try to guide you on your way. If you'd like to join, again, you can send an email to info@highfm.com. Please give us your number, your cell phone number. You've obviously got to have WhatsApp, and we will join you. It's admin driven, so you can even put it on silent. You don't have 15 million people pinging the whole day. It's just a thought there, every single day for you. So if you'd like to, that's what you have to do. It's a wrap up. Thank you very much, Kylie.
Thank you so much, Kylie. That was fantastic.
And thank you, Faggy. As always, this is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. This is 101.9 High FM.